Debbie, Arnie, couples who write together stay together. Is that how it works?
That's how it works with us. We love it. Yep. Love each other and love writing together.
Oh, that's great. This should have been a Valentine's show. Has it always been that way for you? I mean, were you writer pals before you were spouses, or how did that work?
Well, it's always worked. Since we've known each other, we started writing together. And it's a gift. Being able to collaborate is not something everybody can do. And so we recognize that and we value it.
Yep. It's very nice to have someone who's able to surprise you in the act of collaboration, because when we surprise each other, we can surprise the reader.
How does it work for you when it's a critical voice, when one says to the other, you know what, honey, that doesn't work?
We don't say that.
You know, we didn't do.
And, you know, we don't say that to our students either. Our rule when we were both teaching writing separately and together was that a student couldn't say, that doesn't work, I don't know why. You have to know why. You have to have a suggestion. So you don't ever start out, that doesn't work. You say, what do you think of? What if we did this? That's part of being a good collaborator. But you don't ever start out with that. Doesn't work.
It's not that we don't take each other in different directions, or that we don't disagree about a strategy. But we always know that if we apply ourselves to it, we'll work it out.
Yep. And I know we always say that problems lead to better work. And I think if one of us raises something and the other is looking a little askance, we always think about it and come up with some way to use the suggestion and never be offended.
You know, I'm thinking, along with all the books that you've collaborated on, you should add on to your resumes therapy for writer couples.
Yeah.
How to talk to each
hold
other.
Hold ourselves up to that kind of standard.
Yeah, we just thank our lucky stars that we're able to do this.
Right.
So we're talking about two books today. One is a collaboration, a children's book, Mr. Robert Monkey Returns to New York. And then there's a novel, Swept Away, that is under your wing, Arnie. So let's start with the collaboration first, since we're on that line right now. It's a delightful book, a children's book, like I said. Both of you, describe how this book unfolds, what age group it's for, how you came up with the idea.
I have no idea how we came up with the idea. Mr. Robert Monkey is a stuffed animal that Bob Panicki buys for his son, takes him home, and they become fast friends. And it's really a classic story, as many people we've told us have said, oh, that happened to me. When they move to New York, Mr. Robert falls out of Bobby's backpack and is lost. And it's about, after that, it's a four-part story, Mr. Robert making his magical, realistic way back to Bobby. And then they're back together doing the same things in New York, only in a New York way, not a country way. So it's a story of love and redemption and friendship. And it's about 32 a 32-page children's book. Arnie, we wrote it, and then Arnie made it rhyme.
Oh, okay. I was going to ask, who did what and how did that work? How do you pass that one back and forth? And what age group is it marketed for?
It's probably 4 to 10.
Yep.
And also, the reason we put it into rhyming couplet is that allows adults to read to children, which is always nice to get, you know, a child and an adult involved in the process.
Right. It has wonderful illustrations by a lovely young lady named Kelly O'Neill. They're just delightful. You know, it's we just got our copies. We'll take some over to Dean at Michigan News. It's available on Amazon. It's a really nice book.
So you've worked together on lots of different types of books and plays and anthologies and that kind of a thing. Correct me if I'm wrong. Is this the first children's book?
It is.
The one and only.
How was that different, or is it different at all, working together on a children's book rather than, say, a play?
Not really. Stories have to have a beginning, a middle, and an end. They have to be interesting, exciting, whether they're children's books or a very serious play. So
we tend to start off, no matter what we're collaborating on, and it's usually plays, and now this children's book, we usually begin with characters talking to each other. And when we get to a certain point where, you know, we're having fun with dialogue and character, one of us will say, you know, something has to happen here. and then we start thinking about plot and structure. And that's the way Mr. Robert evolved, too.
Yep. Plus, we were crazy monkey, stuffed monkey collectors for a while.
You know, you just hit on what I was going to ask next. Is there a real Mr. Robert?
There is. We collected monkeys everywhere, and now we're giving them away to any child who passes in front of us. They can choose whatever they want. They can choose more than one. We're trying to clear some monkey-free space.
It's one of those Great Oaks from Little Acorns stories. We were in Colorado, in Boulder, and we went into a Walton bookstore, and I happened to see this little monkey toy, stuffed monkey, and on a whim, I bought it for Debbie. And from that one little monkey, hundreds of monkeys, an embarrassing number of monkeys.
We don't let people see all of them. We don't
develop.
We're never too old for a stuffed toy, are we?
No.
And monkeys always make you smile.
Right.
They do. Yeah, I was still buying stuffed toys for my mom in her 90s, so I agree. We're never too old to have a little monkey friend.
Yep.
Well, before we turn to your novel, Arnie, Debbie, let me ask you a little bit more about your journey as a writer. Like you said, this is your first and only children's book, at least at this point. Talk a little bit about your journey on how it started, where it started, and how you got to today.
Well, I decided when I was home with little kids, if I was ever going to do this, I needed to start. And I started as the way. This is highfalutin. Flaubert told Guy de Maupassant, write every day. He said, burn it every night. I didn't burn it every night. But, you know, I made myself sit down and write 600 words a day, and goodness, I got better. I took classes at Western, and the harder you work, you learn techniques, you learn where a good story comes from. It's practice, practice, practice. 10,000 hours of practice, as Malcolm Gladwell says.
I'm thinking that's probably the best advice you can give to young aspiring writers is, more than anything else, just keep doing it every day. Would you agree?
Don't hang on to the old, precious things. Write something new.
And now to your novel, Arnie, Swept Away. Tell us a nutshell synopsis of what this book is about.
Well, it's about a man who is struggling to get tenure at a small fictional Eastern university, and he looks as if the struggle is going to be a losing one, and suddenly one day his alma mater, Wayne State in Detroit, says they'd like to do a production of one of his plays. So he thinks his problems are solved, and he goes to Detroit to be a part of the final week of rehearsal and opening and so forth, and discovers that the world has in store for him a lot more complications than he bargained for.
And I should say, it's funny. From the first line, it is hysterically funny because Arnie knows all the ins and outs of academic world, and there's, can I tell, there's a murder. This guy gets in serious trouble when he gets to Detroit, not from Detroit, but from the university, in the confines of the university. It is a funny, funny book. I have to say that. You make it sound so serious.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, when I first started reading it, I didn't realize it was going to be a murder mystery. And I have to say, it really is a page-turner. It certainly was for me. The deeper I got into it, the faster I was going. But it's also kind of a ghost story, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's interesting. When people ask us about how we work, we talk about it almost as if it's like sewing a quilt. You take odds and ends of material and try to put them into a pleasing pattern. And that's sort of how the ghost story or the paranormal part of the book evolved. I just thought it would be interesting to have as a kind of other dimension.
Yep.
No pun intended.
It was, yeah. In fact, I wasn't sure if it was going to focus more on that or a hardcore Law and Order type of episode or which way it was going to go and or if you were going to intertwine the two. Did you have any ghost stories in your own lives?
No.
Aw, shucks.
I suppose that's why a couple of our plays have also involved ghosts, and I think it's possibly because we don't believe in them that we'd kind of like to, but we don't. But we've been able to use the possibility in the universe in an interesting way in our work.
I was struck with, and maybe it's because I'm aware that you're involved in the theater so much and you've written plays, that I think when a playwright writes a novel, there's a lot of really good dialogue and action. There's constant movement. Are you aware of that yourself, that there's, I think the book could easily be turned into a play?
Well, yeah, I suppose there is that possibility. We actually, you know, if we're writing fiction, we think about the possibility of adapting into a play and vice versa. We like writing in different forms. I write poetry and fiction and plays, and Debbie writes fiction and plays, and she's been poking her nose into poetry lately. you kind of wait for the story to tell you what it wants to be.
The poetry world is punching me back in the nose.
Is it? Are you finding it harder?
Well, if you take as many years as Arnie and I have to learn to write plays and to learn to write fiction, you cannot assume you can just step into somebody else's world and know everything, you know? It's why people say, do you act in your plays? No, I'm not an actor. Arnie is. But he's worked at his craft for a very long time, and I was in some plays, but I sure haven't worked at being an actor. So, no, it's just for fun, just to see what you can do.
And Detroit is a big part of the story, I think. I hadn't been to Detroit in a few years, but as I was reading Swept Away, I was swept away in memories of being there. You brought it back to life for me. Talk about your choice of that as a background.
Well, there are autobiographical elements in the novel, and it's not autobiography. It's just that you take snippets of your own experience, and my own experience is that I came to Detroit with my parents from Scotland, and we lived there together for quite a while until I went off to graduate school. I went to Cass Tech, like the main character. I went to Wayne State, and then I went off east to the University of Delaware as a graduate student. So there are a lot of my old haunts in the novel. And interestingly, since I hadn't been back to Detroit for quite some time, you tend to think you know your old territory. But in fact, if you're going to write about it, you'd better do some research. And I had to do that. I had to do some research about what Detroit's like currently.
So you had to make some trips back and walk around and get the feel of it again?
Yeah, and use Google and try to refamiliarize myself with the place and take myself mentally back as if in a time machine.
Another thing that struck me about the book was there were these really dynamic relationships that I enjoyed reading about, probably the most prominent one being your main character, Dennis, and Eileen, his office mate, not his roommate, but his office mate, as they kept emphasizing.
Yeah, the interesting thing about that, and this is where I think you have to be alive to possibility. I started this really as a novella. I didn't know it was going to burgeon into a full-scale novel. But when I started it off, Dennis had an office mate, and his office mate was a guy. And as I wrote along into the plot, I thought, you know, this is just, doesn't it, it seems kind of inert. And I thought, what if I change the office mate to a woman, and what if she's a lesbian? And by golly, the plot, everything came to life for me. And it also got a lot funnier.
Yeah, I love the banter between the two of them and the way they lovingly, affectionately poke at each other. It's great. He even has this interesting relationship, an electronic one at this point, with his ex-wife.
Yeah, Debbie loves that relationship. She likes the character of that electronic presence that's never seen. It's an also kind of a ghost story.
You could say that, yeah.
I love the woman. She just dishes it right back at him. You know, she's spine, and so I really like that character.
Were you the first eyes on this, Debbie, when Arnie finished the manuscript?
I was eyes on it all the way through.
Is that how you work it? Like you daily read each other's work, or you take a chapter, or you wait for the whole manuscript?
No. You read what you can't stand to not have somebody see.
Ah.
We are both each other's first eyes. And
I just, this morning, I wrote a new ending to a short story I'd been working on for quite some time, and I never liked the ending, and I changed it and immediately read it to Debbie, and she probably thought to herself, it's about time he fixed it.
And I started a new short story, and I like the beginning so much. I don't know what's going to happen. I have no idea. That I also read it aloud. Reading things aloud really helps.
But it does, yeah.
Arnie this morning. So we've been at it today.
So is that how it works for the two of you, that you're not finished with something until you get a thumbs up from the other one?
Well, all the way through, yeah.
Yep. Yeah, pretty much.
Suggestions?
Each of us will make a suggestion about the other's work. And I have to say, I'm the stenographer. Debbie turns her stuff over eventually to me to...
Oh, Arnie is the best, one of the best copy editors in the country. I get it for free. I have to copy edit my work, but... He's wonderful. It's a wonderful skill. That, too, is a skill. It's a talent.
Oh, absolutely. It's a completely different skill to be an editor than to be a writer. You're right.
Yep. And Debbie's fiction is so wonderful that it gives me something to shoot for.
Oh, he's such a sweet boy, isn't he?
Mutual fan club. I think that's the next secret of a good marriage.
Yep.
Any launches or public events? I mean, we're coming through this pandemic. It gets kind of tricky, but what are you planning with these two books? Anything?
Well, we're going to have a webpage. We're working on that. That's a whole lot more work than anybody would imagine, even when somebody else is doing it and guiding you through it. So that's such a pain, but that.
And we are looking to do readings. When I had a book of poetry come out last January, and I mean, January of 2020. And I had a bunch of readings lined up around the country. And, of course, they all got either postponed or canceled. And a number of them wound up being on Zoom. So we're just sort of unabashedly looking to do, you know, some digital readings and work. That way, as well as trying to get reviews and coverage in newspapers and so forth.
I must say about Zoom everything.
Yeah.
I really believe that when we can go back to real things, Zoom will not go away because of the wonderful part of it. In theater, in readings, when Arnie had his poetry reading, you know, you have them in a bookstore and you're lucky if a bunch of people show up, but you're lucky if there are as many there as the two of us. I mean, everybody who's had poetry readings knows this. We had a huge Zoom audience. Our daughter-in-law and granddaughter in Texas listened to it and taped it for the whole family there. Friends from all over the country heard Arnie's Zoom reading. So there are really nice things about Zoom. And I don't think they're going to go away. Too many people have learned new skills. We did it with...
It also cuts down on travel time.
Yes, yes.
Yes, it does. And you can attend in your jammies.
Yes.
We did a Zoom writing and reading with Laura K. Henderson at Bear Backstage Theater, production. Where the whole thing, the writing, the rehearsal, the production in a short period of time was done on Zoom. Well, it was wonderful.
I think you're absolutely right. I think we're going to have a hybrid type of a thing going forward with Zoom and real author's readings, but with a Zoom component to it. And I think that's great. I agree.
Yeah, and the same with theater. I just had the pleasure of playing Prospero in the Civics production of The Tempest, which opens online, and it's sort of like a graphic novel on screen, and it was an amazing experience.
Completely social distanced.
I'll say, yeah. Well, thank you both of you for giving us a bit of your time today to talk about your work separately and together, and keep writing.
Oh,
thank you.
Thank you so much.